and welcome to the Luke Miller Podcast. I'm glad that you're able to join me today. On this week's episode, we're taking a look at Romans chapter 12, verses 15 to 21, as Paul gives us several instructions on what our witness should be like to the outside world. They're very short and sweet little statements, but they carry a lot of weight. I'm excited as we dive deeper into this. I hope you are too. So you can turn in your Bibles to Romans chapter 12, and let's dive in. Welcome back, and after a week off where hopefully you got some time to enjoy some turkey and some food and some friends and family to share that with, we find ourselves back in the book of Romans. And for us, we find ourselves coming to the end of chapter 12 and the end of this series before we jump into a Christmas series. And really what we know about this chapter is a lot of it is Paul telling the Romans that they need to be able to actively show love to people who are difficult to them, people who are persecuting them. That tough challenge of chapter 12, verse 14, which is, bless those who persecute you, bless and not curse. We know that Jesus commanded his followers to love. We know that the early church was well known for its love. And one critic marveled that Christians loved each other even before they met, and yet so many hated them. What was that all about? Because with the amount of love that these people were showing to the community, shouldn't... Why would they have been tossed to the lions? Why would they have been persecuted, and why would they have been killed? It was well known that Nero, the Caesar at the time, was very much using the Christian community as a scapegoat. Anytime he made a bad decision, it was usually the Christian's fault. When he made a great decision, it was his fault. And so we find ourselves taking a look at a few things. One of them is revolving around this idea of love and what that looks like as we deal with people who are persecuting us. And we're called to bless and not persecute them. Our culture, I think it's safe to say, has an understanding of love that is so distorted that some expressions of Christian love are regularly described as hate speech or acts of arrogance or bigotry. If there is a bias against Christianity in some areas of American life and North American life, I believe there is. It's almost certainly focused against those Christians who are constantly carrying out the demands of love in many ways. And I say this because whenever you stand up for something that is, as a Bible-believing Christian, as someone who wants to be true to the Word of God, some things are not going to go with what culture says. And when we stand up for that, even though we are doing it out of love, again, that distorted view of love that the world has takes what we say as hate speech or not love of at all. Now, it's similar to probably what happened to the Roman Christians at this time. And as they talked about the Bible, as they lived out what they were speaking, no doubt that made that culture feel not the greatest, or people didn't like it because it made them feel not as good about themselves as the Christians were speaking. And I think that's what happened with the Roman Christians. Because the Christians loved the Romans, they told them that their idols were false and their mystery religions were often empty promises, and that Jesus Christ was the only way to have salvation. They challenged the Romans that their lifestyles, which endorsed adultery, homosexuality, and other things, were also wrong. They defied the policies that came from Nero and the deaths of unwanted kids and through starvation, and really aimed to take care of what the Old Testament talked about of the poor, the widow, and the orphan. So much of Roman culture at that time was self-centered and taking care of yourself. All of a sudden, when the Christians came in and were taking care of others, it was seen as, oh, you think you're better than us. Where they were just really living out God's calling and what Paul had exhorted them to do. They insisted that God's love extended beyond the narrow boundaries of any one group or people. They violated the laws that would have silenced their witness to Jesus. All of these things would be the downfall of the Roman Christians. And all of these things would be why they were persecuted. Although the resistance to Christianity was not as intense as it would eventually become, the Christians in Rome had probably encountered some who treated them pretty badly because of their commitment to Christ. If those who mistreated them weren't officials of the state, they would have been neighbors, employers, masters. We know that Christians were eventually pushed out of the political system, out of the health system, and out of the financial system of Rome. So we know that persecution was coming from several different fronts. Now, the same principle which governed their relationship with those within the Christian community governed their relationship with those outside the Christian community. They were related to them with sincere love. Genuine love should shape our response to those who oppose our Christian worldview. And let me say that again, because that is the what Paul is going to be tasking us with as we jump further into this passage, that genuine love should shape our response to those who oppose our Christian worldview. Now, Paul lists priorities for those Christians attempting to lovingly respond to those who mistreat them. And he starts off by saying that they should make being a blessing a priority. Bless those who persecute you. The recommendation and the recommended response to the persecutors here may have been just a little shocking to those Christians at that time, that they should go out and bless those. Retaliation is so much a part of our makeup that we expect it to shape our response to mistreatment in so many ways. When something bad happens to us, we want to retaliate. We want revenge. And it's true that as we take a look at this, this is a difficult thing. The Christians is not simply to avoid retaliation, but the Christian is to bless the persecutor. It's not just avoid doing something bad, but actively bless in return. And in the Bible, blessing means to call down God's best on someone. How tough is that? If someone mistreats us, it's so tempting to secretly wish that God would somehow, in some way, mess with them, send a plague, if you will, smite them if they've cut you off in traffic. But instead, we are to wish for God to give them the very best. There's something implicit in this command that I don't want us to miss. When we bless or when we curse, our words are involved. And although Paul doesn't say it directly, he seems to remind us that even when we need to, that no matter what it is, we need to watch what we say about those who have harmed us. And that's another tough assignment. Because as Paul moves on in this passage, we see that he challenges us to make integrity a priority. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everybody. Now, integrity seems to be a central idea in this entire verse. If Christians were to repay evil with evil, how different would they be from the rest of the world? In many ways, this command echoes what Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount, where he says, "You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven. For he makes the sun rise and on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the just and on the unjust. For if you love those who love you, and what reward do you have? Do not even tax collectors do the same? And if you only greet your brothers, what more are you doing than others? Do not even the Gentiles do the same? Therefore, you must therefore be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect." Oh, okay. Well, that's easy then, right? All we have to do is be perfect. And I think here it's easy for us to take that statement from the Sermon on the Mount, applying it to this and saying, well, okay, this isn't possible. First of all, we can't be everything to everybody. But secondly, we can't be perfect. And later on, we're challenged with the fact where it says, if it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. And we love to take that phrase, if it is possible. And quickly, we use that phrase and say, you know what? It is not possible, even when it is the smallest of things. But getting back to that perfect idea, and the heart of the word perfect in the passage is the idea of completeness, not living just a perfect life. Just as God's love is complete, it's extending to all. So you should extend his love to all. And that's kind of the key thing in here. Being perfect in view of God for what it's talking about in this passage is owning when you mess up, being able to bless those when you may have cursed them in the past. It's being able to ask for forgiveness. It's being able to give forgiveness as well, or to be able to forgive those who've done stuff to us as well. It's nothing. I want to say that nothing fuels the argument of a critic of Christianity like Christians who don't act like Christians. And Paul is calling us to live with integrity even before those whose goal is our destruction. When people want to destroy us, it's saying you still have to live with integrity. And you still have to act like a Christ follower, and you have to make peace a priority. And that's really that next step that we see here. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Now, that may come as a surprise, and there are Christians who might make us wonder if one of the gifts of the Spirit is the opposite of peace, is just conflict making. Some Christians' approach to non-Christian world is go in with a fight. And I want to take a moment, even as we talk about this, to say there is a difference from what Jesus says in the Sermon on the Mount when he says, blessed are the meek. And often we think, okay, well, that is passive. Meek is not weak. And often that gets translated that way, where we think of, if I'm living a meek life, if I'm living a peaceful life, then I am just letting people walk over me, then I am being too passive. Making peace is a priority, yet at the same time, standing up for our values is also a priority. Now, Paul seems to recognize that there are times where conflict is inevitable, but he warns against the demeanor of Christian values when we are in that conflict. There are enough genuine sources of conflict in culture dominated by non-Christian values that we really don't have to create new issues because there's a lot of conflict in the world going on. And so it's saying, what's our demeanor? Is it unnecessarily abrasive when we're dealing with people? Or are we approaching conflict in a way that can still be a blessing? Now, the way that we do that is pray for transformation and make transformation a priority in our lives. We make peace a priority, and that leads, I believe, to transformation. Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave the wrath to God. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. Oh, that passage that we've heard so many times, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. And we want revenge. And yet here we have, no matter how unjustly we have been treated, revenge should not be the first thing on our agenda. Notice how Paul addresses his readers in affectionate terms here, beloved. Maybe he does so because he's sympathetic with the pain that they're going through and understands their desire to see some kind of justice done right here and now. But then he calls for them to have patience and leave the matter in God's hands. Something that I talked about last Sunday was this tiny little passage can have such an impact in our lives. Because when we take revenge, when we take ownership of getting revenge, when we want to retaliate, often we retaliate in excess. Very rarely do we just simply give a little tap on the hand and say, no, you shouldn't do that. We often retaliate in excess. And secondly, that when we retaliate, it ruins our witness. We never know what God's plans are for that person who is mistreating us at that time. Which is why Paul says that no matter how unjustly we have been treated, we should not make revenge find a place in our agenda. And And Christians will want to do this. I have wanted to do this. And Christians do believe that there will be a final accounting. There will be justice. And that's what I love. Now, I don't know about you, but I am not a person who likes to wait. When we are in Israel, I would have to go down and pay for our power bill and our water bill all in person at the municipal office. And I don't think that they believe in lines in Israel. When you go to these places, it is just a large group of people, and somehow you eventually apply enough pressure and push your way to the front that you find yourself at the front of the stall. Now, the first day, I didn't know this, and I went in there, and I must have been there for 4 hours, and I realized that I'm not moving, yet I've watched people come in after me, and they are now walking out because they've paid their bill. And I'm not a patient person when it comes to this. I don't like waiting in lines. I mean, that's why Disney has the Fast Pass, is because we don't have a lot of patience, right? We want to be able to skip the longer version of what we see in front of us for something that is quicker, something that is easier, and something that is readily accessible. The problem that we have when we start taking the approach that, you know what, we'll take vengeance or retaliation into our own hands is kind of like when I'm sitting there in line in Israel and there's just 100 people grouped together, and the moment you start pushing, what happens? People start pushing back, and you're trying to make your way up to the front, but everybody else is trying to make their way up to the front. Everybody is thinking of the number one priority, which is them. And anything that gets in their way is against them. That's the mentality that we have to shift as Christ followers, that anything that is pushing back is simply our enemy. Because we know that God says, and God is looking at people and he's saying, you know what? I've got a plan for them. And even in this moment when they're persecuting us, no matter how bad it is and how horrible it is, that God might transform their hearts. He might transform their heart tomorrow or the next day or 3 years from now. We may not even be there to witness that transformation, but God, we know, can transform the hearts of kings and queens and pharaohs, so he can definitely transform the heart of the neighbor that we don't like, or the neighbor who is being horrible to us, or the family member who is constantly being anti-Christian to us. I think this is the hardest part of what Paul is writing about here, is this not only being able to forgive, but also being able to not take vengeance into our own hands. And it's hard for us to imagine this idea of loving our enemy and what that looks like in our own lives. If wanting God's best for your enemy really means you are wanting God's best, we will want that for our enemy. And I suspect that's why Paul won't allow his readers to simply sit back and wait for God's judgment to fall on their enemies. They are not just going to avoid taking revenge. They're actually to act with positive kindness towards their enemies. Remember what he says. If your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. One commentator pointed out that this covers meeting the basic needs of life. And how easy would it be to watch our enemies starve? How satisfying that would that be, especially to Romans who had been persecuting to the point of death the people that Paul's writing to. But Paul says we can't. We would have to intervene. So what does this look like for us? I know we see this, and I've mentioned, you know, that Jonah is a classic example of this. Sent to Nineveh, didn't want to go, delivered the message, and then went and sit on the mountaintop and waited for the fire and brimstone to come from heaven and to destroy Nineveh so he could have that satisfaction. And instead, God spares Nineveh, and then Nineveh gets angry, and then Jonah gets angry. Of all the responses, that the best possible response that could happen, and Jonah gets angry. A revival takes place in Nineveh, and Jonah is mad at God because he didn't smite the entire city. And I think that's what we get ourselves caught in as well, when we're waiting for God's judgment. And sometimes when God transforms the heart of the person we least expect, there's sometimes bitterness that we have to be aware of that may creep into our lives. Because we wanted God to do something. Oh, we just didn't think he was going to transform their heart and make them a Christ follower and watch them start to bless others in the neighborhood after you put up with persecution for years. You wanted fire and brimstone to fall from heaven and, you know, destroy that person's life in Job-esque situations where they lose everything. And it's easy for bitterness to creep in. And so Paul warns us against this. And so as we start to wrap this up, here's some observations about responding to our enemies that I hope will be helpful for this week. Because I think we probably all have someone in our lives who we may need to respond to because they are persecuting us. Here's the way that I look at it as far as how we love our enemies and responding with sincere love. One is that we can respond to an enemy with sincere love only to see no positive response. Okay, so understand that you may show love and you may not get the response back. Still, there are hard cases whose people whose hatred of Christ and Christianity knows no bounds. And sometimes those people may be in your family and may be among those who are closest to you or acquaintances at work or at school. And you have to come to the realization that you may not see those positive responses. The other thing is that nothing in the Christian call to respond to our enemies with sincere love demands that we stay in harm's way. And I want to make that very clear. Shortly after the end of the first century, the church began to wrestle with this issue. And in the time, the wisest leaders concluded that God did not demand his followers to stay in danger zones. If forced to defend their faith in the face of death, they should do so. But if given the opportunity to escape to safety, they should take it. And there are many times when the church needs to take a stand with these people to help them get settled into that new life, people who are persecuted. But also in our own lives, realizing that there are times where we should not stand in harm's way. We can still show love, but we should not stand in harm's way. We also understand that sincere love in response to an abusive enemy is a noble goal to which we should all aspire, but failure to achieve that goal is a universal experience. What I mean is when someone is persecuting us, abusive to us, there is that universal, you're not the only one. And there's this realization that you are not the only one there, which is why that church community is so important. Now, please take a note that when I say abusive, I'm talking about people who are actively persecuting Christianity and persecuting you in your life. When we're talking about physical abuse and emotional abuse, I believe that what I just stated, where we, no matter how strong we are as Christ followers and how much that demand love is, that we should not stand in harm's way when we are actively being hurt. And as I talked about in first century, where, you know, in the face of death, in the face of extreme persecution, you know, you need to get out of a place where harm will be done to you. But universally, each and every one of us is going to face persecution. And we have to acknowledge that. And the sooner we recognize it, the sooner I think we'll actually be able to have a better ministry. Because so much is associated with Christian love, that treating our enemies with benevolence, many of it begins in a way that is rooted in a new way of thinking with our emotions. No matter how powerful they may be at the moment, no matter what our natural instincts are, which often are very cultural instincts of wanting revenge or wanting retaliation, that we have to take that moment and step back and think about what Paul is challenging us to do. Be the peacemaker. Be the one who wants to see transformation. And really, the toughest thing that we look at today is to be able to bless those and want God's best for those who are hurting us, which is a tough thing to ask, but it's a challenge for each and every one of us this week. So I'm going to leave it at there this week. I know this is a tough passage, and I know as we're finishing up, it's not easy, but I'm glad that we tackle this because we have to. Because this week, maybe today, maybe this very hour, maybe you're listening to this podcast as you're walking to work, and you are realizing that you're going to face persecution today for what you believe. So using God's love, don't abandon your Christian worldview. Be able to show that love, be able to be that peacemaker, and pray that God would transform the hearts of those who are persecuting you right now, whether it's at work or in your own home or in your neighborhood. I'll leave it there for today. So take care, have a great week, and I'm looking forward to our Christmas series as we dive in to a series called Here Comes Heaven. So take care, have a great week, and we'll talk to you next week. Thank you for joining us on the Luke Miller Podcast, a part of Sunrise Digital Ministries at Sunrise Community Church in Fair Oaks, California. If you're wanting to know more about our digital ministries, you can download our app at the Google Play Store or the Apple Store, where you'll find Backshed Bible Study, Sunday Sermons, and the Luke Miller Podcast. If you've got questions about who Jesus is or what it means to be a Christ follower, we would love to connect with you. And you can send us a note at www.sunrise.church/welcome, and we'll get you connected. Thanks again for joining us. Take care.